establishing ourselves in the awareness of this body, the self becomes the guardian as we establish this awareness of this foundation of this body, and then our attention is free. Even though our attention then comes in to receptivity with the foundational awareness of the body and breathing, it is free in this receptivity, and it is freed as well. Clarity and clarification arise because the reflective power of our practice slowly begins to dawn into the grasping process, that what it is that is cannot be grasped. Not through understanding at an intellectual level, nor can it be grasped in order to hold it out of some need fulfillment. As soon as grasping occurs, then what's occurring is grasping. And I experienced a moment of grasping as I sat down and was just settling in to the awareness of sitting, breathing, and the awareness of the intention to share the Upeka practice. And I had this thought of, oh, I wish we had at least a week. And in that moment, if that had been what was held in resonance, I would have forgotten the fact that each moment is so full within itself. And that one of the things that I have come to appreciate deeply in living a life of practice is that it's all just within the moment. And that I hardly know the distinction between intensive practice and just practice itself. You know, it's not about how long. It's about sincerity and availability to this process. And that grows naturally over time. This process is happening whether there's a lot of noise around us or whether or not. And a lot of the noise around us is internal. And so much of the time we're using outside circumstances in order to quiet the internal noise. And our practice grows and expands to allow for this noise, as opposed to this aversive manner by which we live, believing that somehow there's something to get rid of. It's a belief, and it comes from what's referred to, unfortunately, as wrong view. I like to reframe it respectfully as unskillful view. My transition from my own personal experience in Zen, my root teacher, Zen Master Sansanin, to Vipassana came very naturally, just kind of organically. It wasn't about leaving something and starting something else. It just was about going with a friend that was a part of the Zen house where we were living with Sansanin, and we just happened to join another friend who had just gotten back from India, you know, and had disrobed, and maybe he was still in robes, I don't remember. And, you know, to join this person sitting. And the thing I heard that made all the difference, that had that swayed the cushion into Vipassana, you know, this ever-floating cushion, it was hearing that this is an all-inclusive practice. And Joseph Goldstein particularly likes this quote about everything included. I don't remember, it was cherry tree something sitting and everything included, nothing left out. And it's only that which the mistaken view is leaving out that is keeping us in separation. Because what we're doing is expanding the consciousness in order to include everything with respect. And respect is a kind of neutral term. It isn't laden with, I have to have this, it has to have that, da, 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 da. It just is that this is such a miraculous process here. I mean, what can we do other than respect it and be grateful for it? If otherwise, I don't know what I'm doing. Because the environment and the atmospherics of consciousness just closed down. Equanimity practice is one of the Brahma Viharas, and in the way that Brahma Viharas settle in underneath the umbrella of Vipassana is that they are essentially paramis. They are mindfulness practices that build up the cohesive force of what we call mind into a more balanced consciousness. It's called maturing consciousness. So that one is literally perceiving within a field. Perceiving within a field that is created through continuity. Does that make sense? Because I want this to make sense or else it's senseless. So, you know, because it's said that the mind is a vast field of energy. And so as we gather what we're doing in the practice by offering our attention, it's really simple. The physics of practice, we're just gathering the force of this energy here. And then it becomes reflective as opposed to grasping. That's all that's going on. And the way that this serves our humanness is that we have the capacity to mature and give rise to dormant aspects of maturing consciousness. So as you know, we practice that which we value, and as we practice over time, and I mean over, you know, infinite time, if you will, then our attention is drawn to the cultivation of certain aspects that do just naturally become reflected within this cohesive field. And the heart resonates, and the longing of the heart comes into resonance rather than wanting. It comes into resonance with what's brought in to focus within this cohesive field, so that as we value, for instance, what we call metta, I really have investigated metta through scholarly and as well intensive practice, all of the Brahma Viharas, and the longing of the heart is just fulfilled because there is this cohesive field in which that sense of something missing just doesn't exist. And that sense of wholeness or presence that we want and think and like and occasionally arises as a result. I can want presence until the day this body dies. I want to be present. That's the new one. I want you to be present. I want you to be present. I don't know what that means. But that's what I want. If everybody were present, we wouldn't have war. Oh, okay. So we live on demand until we experience that release of our attention into the cultivation of the causes and effects, so simple that allow for the consciousness to mature. And one aspect of maturing consciousness is the equanimity. And the intention that brings our attention into balance with the cultivation of equanimity is realizing the value of balance. And it's not a balance that the self can look for, but it's a sensibility. It's that tolerance, as I said, for some degree of stillness, because this balance is like a lightning rod. So that one becomes familiar with this sense of balance, then our attention, it just gravitates and brings with it reactivity that gets just like, you know, just, oh, it's fine. Do we, oh, whatever. Yeah, if you want to close, it's fine. But So this sense of reactivity just becomes discharged. And all the energy within that reactivity becomes reallocated and feeds this field. This field feeds this field and feeds this perceptual process that's just occurring through this receptivity. There's a lovely little poem by a Thai meditation master. She's no longer living. Who was blind, and she has this quote that lives in me, thank you. An inner staying, unentangled knowing, all outward going knowing, falling away. And so that is this receptivity. There's nowhere to go. It's all right here. Well, yeah, but I have this plan to go to China. Well, but that's not really going to China. It's that this body is either sitting and standing or walking and breathing. And the environment changes. And we begin to see this from within. So part of what equanimity provides as an effect, as this continuity of mindfulness, is something that we cultivate with the upekkha bhavana or equanimity practice in mind, is it does bring about a greater tolerance for stillness and receptivity and non-grasping, because it is the antidote, it is the counterbalancing force for the ignorance associated with clinging and craving and grasping, just this. It's an electrical charge. It's like that. And it hurts. And because we think it hurts, we're supposed to, I don't know what, feed it. Whereas instead, upekkha allows for that sense, that this is impulse. That's what it is. As opposed to something that needs to be fulfilled. And it's such a beautiful experience through the practice in this cohesive field that we cultivate through continuity to begin to become familiar with that which is moving. Impulse. It is an interesting word. It's very exacting. Pulse. And how we have this confusion. It's like, yes, what do you want? What do you want? And it's just a pulse. It doesn't want anything. It's empty. It's just an uncomfortable sensation. And therefore, it's possible within this field, this cohesive field, where there's some greater tolerance for stillness and that kind of, that still of the compass hand, then we become interested in that which moves. We're not saying, oh, look what's moving. But within stillness, there's movement, right? And it becomes just clear with the understanding that we're just offering our attention. The rest of it has it on its own. Completely on its own. Just like the body is breathing on its own. Am I saying, okay, now breathe out. Now breathe in. Anybody doing that? From the moment you're born. Okay, I have to breathe, so breathe out, breathe in. It's just happening on its own. Everything's just happening on its own. Oh no, I have no control. Well, control comes through balance. Control comes through discernment. Control comes through choosing. So the Buddha said that everything is just happening in its own. There's just one factor that we have to work with, which is attention. So during this particular practice, you will find that the challenge is the same as any aspect within practice, which is the awareness of the distinction between thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking and imaging and thinking and the continuity of awareness in receptivity with the what's called object of concentration. It's so simple and so clear. because this cohesive field of gathering is just occurs through patience and continuity in this shift into receptivity. So just as we've enjoyed the awareness with breathing, become more receptive to the sensations, and that's so critical, it is critical that we understand that mindfulness is that receptivity that allows for us to recognize the distinction between thinking and weightedness, sensation, and it would be another long, long, long thing if we were to go into the other foundations, but this is what's essential, this is what establishes the foundation, this is where we live. How do I want to live where I live? This is where I live. This is it. There's this one place, this body. How do I want to live here? With equanimity. That's my answer to the question. It may be challenging to hear that the actual equanimity practice, just like the other Brahmavihara practices, involves words. You know, are you familiar with the metta practice? There are words. Those words represent intention, and they are a form that lifts our consciousness into states that have no words. So there's a mistake that happens a lot with we Westerners, you know, who just think we need to reshape, and, you know, it's like, well, thanks for this practice, but I don't think I like it. Let me see. I think I want to change those words. I don't feel that those words are the right words. And so because I teach a lot of retreats, it's, you know, that's a place of getting stuck. I've been spending this whole retreat trying to feel the right words. It's like, oh, okay. Meanwhile, I hand on, you know, through tradition, what I was taught. And the words, are you prepared? For upeka practice is the acknowledgement that I am the owner of this karma. Karma means that whatever arises in the mind through speech or through bodily existence, through movement, I'm the owner of it. And I always use this. It's sort of like this. It clears up the confusion about, you know, there's a leak in my roof, so I'm going to go over to my neighbor and say, I have a leak in my roof. What are you going to do about it? You know, what are you going to do about my suffering? You know, I want the whole world to fulfill what I want and need in terms of what I believe non-suffering is. Kind of silly when we put it that way, right? Equanimity matures that silliness. And we recognize that the wanting is really immature. Vimalathakar said, we may be surprised that we're still operating out of a pre- or adolescent consciousness. You know? So it's like, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. So what upeka does is it literally shifts the frequency within this field of sensibility, where sensibility arises through sense, sensibility, and this natural affinity with that which is clear and that which is wholesome happens automatically. If you want to stop working so hard, I don't know what you're working at, being good? I don't know what the concept is. I wish we had time to find it. Yeah, it's like, I don't know what I'm working at, but equanimity also offers ease. And sometimes we say, nope, I'm not ready for ease. I really, you know, I got to dig deeper and go on this archaeological dig to find my true self. And, you know, but it just kind of, in that environment, offers that sense of ease. And at first it feels kind of, I don't know, you know, ease in a world that is so full of suffering. And the Buddha pointed out, yes, ease, and as well what's called Vipassana happiness, in a world full of suffering, because the suffering world is simply a reflection of the uninvestigated aspects within this individual consciousness manifesting in infinite form. I can only meet this here and share my openness and intelligence with others if they're interested. I don't mean mine, I mean universally. So these words are, I am the owner of whatever happens here, my karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise from these actions and not outside causes. Well, I'm really unhappy about this, so democratic, you know, and this, I'm really unhappy about this and this and that. Okay, well, all right, be really unhappy. What is that going to do? Oh, I have a choice. And it's just in an awareness of a shift that comes through these words, because the words represent the consciousness. I don't know if you like these words, but to whatever degree this is true within one's already established mindful receptivity, these words will make sense. If we argue with them, then we are just really saying that the inner authority born of confusion needs to argue with these words. Just the degree to which they are true is enough. So maybe just sort of breathe in the words. I breathe them in from Upandita, and you know, breathe them in through Joseph. Breathe them in through Sharon. Breathe them in. We breathe them together. I am the owner of my karma. Or you could say this. Happiness and unhappiness arise within these actions and not outside causes. Is that palpable? Say it out loud if you want, just to see what it feels like. Whisper it. Breathe with it for a moment. And if there's too much aversion to it, then enjoy the cultivation of equanimity within the experience of this body breathing. Here it is. So for this, through the walking period, the sit, and the closing today, experiment. I am the owner of my karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise within my actions and not outside causes. Don't look to verify it in the world. This is for you out of your own wisdom. I am the owner of my karma. Happiness and unhappiness arises through my actions and not outside causes. I will repeat it a few more times until it just becomes silent. I am the owner of my karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise through my actions and not outside causes. And by the way, this is about the here and now, not the past. In this moment, that's all there is. In this moment, I am the owner of my karma. In this moment, happiness and unhappiness arise through my actions. In this moment, and not outside causes, in this moment. I am the owner of my karma. Happiness and unhappiness arise through my actions and not outside causes. allowing yourself to breathe with a sense of truth within this. Returning. Take note of the distinction between thinking, the phrases, and simply cultivating them with a neutral awareness, with patience and continuity. Note the distinction. Returning to the simplicity of the practice. Whether this practice feels easy or difficult is not the criteria that we look towards. Easy is pleasant, difficult is unpleasant. Simply acknowledge each for what they are. And return. For the practice itself is neutral. The reference for this walking period, the reference itself, walking period, is just, again, part of the ordinariness of our lives, perhaps, because of the effects of our practice, there's a little bit of slowing down, wisdom of slowing down. Upeka supports pausing and slowing down to accommodate and maintain that which one intends. So the art of intentional walking is to choose a pace that supports the continuity of practice. And so oftentimes what we do is we choose a smaller space rather than a taking a walk space. But just because the intention gets clearer that we're increasingly developing more faith, that it is possible, as they say in the Thai forest tradition, to keep the Dhamma in mind. So it's right here, and essentially this is feeding it, keeping it alive. And it's not instead of anything else, it's with. It's not instead of, it's with. So our practice is, in one way of looking at it, a great intimacy with whatever's occurring, from the inside out. And so you might feel, okay, I'm going to do walking meditation now. Whereas you might as well have the sense that there's some wisdom in experiencing the continuity from sitting to the process, through the movement, standing, awareness of standing. You've heard about this. And as well, then walking with the Dhamma in mind, with the equanimity phrases in mind. What is it like to support it in the way that you choose to move? It's an experiment. if the phrase feels too long, then just choose a part of it until it feels like there's enough room for the whole experience of I am the owner of my... let's just start with a piece that seems to have most juice.